The bad boys are always catching my eye. Yes, I'm Paul McInnes, and this is Music Weekly. Coming over the hill in an oral stampede, it's our first ever proper jazz interview. Yes, we're hanging with Portico Quartet, or should that be Han? We've got heavy-hitting new music from Lady Gaga, LCD Sound System, and Monsters of Folk. We'll have your thoughts on how to pronounce Sufjan Stevens' name, and we've got the Afghan Whigs in the feature with no name. But first, let's raise the BPM on this mother. That was End Credits, the latest single from Chase and Status, our first guest this week. The North London duo of Saul Milton and Will Kennard have been making music as Chase and Status for half a dozen years, getting kudos for their melodic, punchy drum and bass, if not many sales. But 2009 has seen all that turn around, as the duo have become producers to the stars, remixing Jay-Z and working with the very Rihanna on her upcoming album, where they're hoping to get as many as half a dozen tracks into the final cut. I met them earlier this week to talk about changing times in dance music, and I started by asking, after all that's happened in the past 12 months, just what are they doing to keep it real?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question.
And the hesitation suggests you're not.
Yeah, no, we're trying very hard.
Trying
I'm not
hard
sure if we are.
I'm rolling around on a tour bus with this flat screen TV is keeping it real.
Yeah. But just trying to eat, you know, a healthy breakfast. Bowl of Shreddies usually does the job.
Really, that's one of my favourite cereals.
Yeah,
as well.
that's
speak
yeah.
for yourselves.
But no, just working our socks off, really, and no real time to do anything else. And hopefully it's all going to plan. We've always been into every style of music, really. When we were growing up, sounds like we're really old.
We're older than we were.
I think kids are a bit more sort of cliquey. You know, if you're into drum and bass, you definitely weren't into sort of two-step garage. But we were kind of into it all. We were into sort of 80s kind of pop and then like the harder sort of dancehall kind of stuff. And now I think, you know, we're getting a chance to express that. And I think, you know, the crowds we're seeing and the gigs we're doing, they're really just into everything, and just good sort of energetic, powerful music is really sort of translating well now. This is anti-auto-tune, death for the ringtone. This ain't for iTunes, this ain't for sing-along.
This is Sinatra at the opera, bring a blonde, preferably with a fat ass who can sing a song. I suppose one of the kind of the most iconic things you've come out with this year, and then a real step forward, is that Jay-Z remix, the Death of Auto-Tune, which is kind of almost a dubstep-y back into that rap.
Yeah.
You tell us a little bit about how that came about.
We were actually out there writing stuff for a Roc Nation artist and finishing up things for Rihanna's project. And Jay Brown came in and said, do you guys want to remix DOA for Jay-Z? We said yes. And he gave us the acapella that day. And we said, we did a version straight away. He said, okay, cool. And then he said, I don't know about that one. Do another one. Did another one. I don't know, do another one. So by about midnight, we'd done three versions. We're like, well, what's going on?
It's about 6 a.m.
Yeah, no, sorry, yeah, 6 a.m, but English time would have been whatever.
Just the clock for our listeners.
And we said, look, Breezy, what's going on with these mixes? And he was like, hey, man, I like the first one. I just want to see how hard you guys would work.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that is classic North American mentality, in it. Do you think North American music, I suppose urban music, is more receptive to European dance rhythms and practices than they were, say, 5 years ago now?
Definitely. Like, before we started doing this stuff, like, over there, they started getting really big into that, like, European house sound. Like, the whole David Guetta, what he's doing with Akon and Kelly Rowland. Really, if you listen to the backing tracks, they could have been about, like, 4 or 5 years ago here, because that kind of style, like, clubs-wise here, is kind of done now. They're onto something different with the house. But they're, you know, they're like, I love this Balearic kind of sound. This is the one. well, it was that one like 10 years ago. And now I think with the whole how hip hop and R&B has gone over there, because they've been top of the game for so long now, and they've like done everything you can do with an 808 really. They're sort of looking over for new inspiration and new influences, and fortunately for us, we've happened to stumble across this kind of style of dubstep and stuff that's completely different to them and works well for the tempo for them to rap and sing.
But it's, I mean, you know, you've been kind of into drum and bass for a long time, and that music's been around for a long time and never really got picked up. And it's interesting that you suggest it's only when they've got to the point of we've done it all now, what do we do, that they actively start listening out for other things.
I think with the reason drum and bass hasn't been like picked up on a wide scale is just the tempo. It's 175 BPM generally. It's really fast. Like, the older I'm getting, the more I realise it's really fast.
It also really comes from the rave culture, which they'd really never had at that time. And they just don't get that at all. Whereas I think the dubstep thing...
smoked out.
It's got a hip-hop feel. It's got a bit more of that sort of swagger. And
okay, then. So tell us about Rihanna.
She's cool.
She's nice, is she?
Yeah, she is. Lovely girl, yeah. Yeah, to cut a long story short, just as we were signing with Rock Nation, our manager is very close with them and basically bombarded them with our music, I think on a journey to a gig somewhere in England where there was no getting out of the car. Our manager kind of like, he's okay, it's good, I'll take the CD, man, and left with it. And I started speaking to him on the phone. He was like, hey man, look, Rihanna loves what you're doing, want to get you involved for the next records. We were like, yeah, right, like that's going to happen. He's like, do you not believe me, man?
Was there not even a little bit of you thought that this might actually happen?
Well, sort of small, but you've got to, you can't, you know, the amount of things people said to us over the years. Right. And anyway, so he kept calling me saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I was like, okay, great. And then one day he goes, do you believe me? I was like, yeah, of course. He's like, okay, I'll prove this to you, man. I was like, whatever. And 5 a.m. came, I was fast asleep, my phone rang, it's him. He said, hey, Saul, I got someone who wants to speak to you, 1 second. I said, yeah, hello. Hey, it's Rihanna. I was like, you're right? She basically said that she loves the music. She loves a particular song of ours called Saxon and can't wait to work with us. And if you give the beats to anyone else, she'll kill us.
Wow, a murder threat.
Yeah, best way to wake up on a Sunday.
He was lying there next to his girlfriend. Yeah. He's going, who's that?
Nothing.
It's a girl on the other end.
Pretty much, yeah. So, yeah, it all worked out. And then we went down to studios in West London. They were all in this one big studio downstairs. There was producers called Stargate, Rihanna, all her entourage, her management.
Mr. Hudson was in there
relaxing. Lots of like top line writers, and other people are swanning in and out. And Will and I were also in there,
thinking, like, "What the hell are we doing? Do they actually know what kind of music we really make?" That's what I was thinking.
And they said, "Right, show us what you got." So we're sitting there with our computer and loads of loops and the whole entourage behind us, thinking, here we go.
Well, like a dozen people crowded over
laptop. 20 people.
About 20 people sitting on the bike. You know, songs, you know, songwriters coming up with melodies over like a quick beeline they might hear. And
I've seen that, those videos, those YouTube ones of like Jay-Z and Timbaland sitting in the studios and he kind of goes through all the beats.
That's exactly how it was. Exactly, except there's about 25 people watching us and they didn't know who we were.
Yeah, exactly.
They were like, who are these guys? What is this?
Now, I'd like to kind of round up this interview with a generic question in the way that I opened it, so it's kind of like a bookend, it's like a structure,
cool,
which shows a degree of professionalism. Brilliant. And that question I would ask would be, what, over all your, I suppose professionally, what's your favourite beat?
I think probably one of the favourite tracks we've written was a dubstep track called Eastern Jam, which just the way it came about, we created it very organically, and it just sort of fell into place. And we finished that track sort of 3 a.m. in the studio, and we didn't even know about it. We just sort of bashed it together and then zipped off to the End nightclub in London when it was still at its peak and played at a Ram Records night there, and it was just one of the best systems in the world. And, you know, half an hour after burning this track, which we didn't really know if it was any good or not, we played it and the whole place went absolutely crazy, and that feeling was just really magical. Yeah. From there the track sort of took on its own
thing. Is it not Snoop Dogg Billionaire now?
Then Snoop Dogg got in touch and that whole American link happened as well, so that's just a special track.
ultimately opened up all the doors for all the production stuff. Because
really,
off the back of that, we've heard from Jay-Z that he wanted Eastern Jam, someone else wanted Eastern Jam. Literally, like, everyone wanted that track. And the fact that Snoop just heard it first, got on it, everyone realised, oh, we were late, we should have got on that, and then let's get these boys in now for something else. So it kind of was the whole, like, domino effect, really, with that track.
Chasing Status, thank you very much for your time from your busy schedule.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Drum and bass fade out there. That was Saul and Will of Chasing Status. The single End Credits is available to download from November 1, and the tour, as they say, is ongoing. Joining me here now is the one, the only, the inordinately bony, it's Ms. Rosie Swash.
Never been described as inordinately bony.
No, but I desperately needed a rhyme, so it had to be that. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. It's been a fine week. It's flown past, in fact, hasn't it? It's autumn or something. Alongside us both, joining us, Singles Club, bit of review time, Alex Needham, culture editor.
Hello, Paul.
Hello. Okay, let's get reviewing, and we're going to start with an obscure Peruvian throat singer. Only joking. It's Lady Gaga, and this is Bad Romance. That was Bad Romance by Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga now owns Planet Earth. She bought it from Rupert Murdoch last Thursday and has announced her intention to be a benevolent despot. This track is taken from her upcoming second album, The Fame Monster, to rave reviews from fans. One such on her official site read, "Gaga is amazeballs." So if you wonder where the rumours came from, maybe the fans started it. Alex.
Well, someone I know recently saw Lady Gaga totally stark naked
and can attest.
And
he didn't say that there was anything untoward going on in the downstairs department.
At last, we can quash that.
Exactly.
But back to the tune.
Back to the tune. Well, this is from The Fame Monster. It's The Fame repackaged, but she's done a whole 8 extra tracks. And I think this song just shows her awesome kind of confidence at the moment. It's got incredible gusto. The chorus is like the crack cocaine of choruses. I just think it's really brilliantly done, and I like the sort of whole shamelessness and full, you know, everything's done full throttle, and that's what I really like about it.
You see, if you were to say crack cocaine of choruses, I'd think disgusting and chaotic, and I think that applies to my take on the song as well. Rosie,
So you're not a fan?
I just can't. I just think if this is the most popular sound of 2009, this kind of backwards-looking Euro pop from like 2004, done with, this kind of blasé grandeur. These things that when she ends up going rah rah Romanar Gaga ooh la la, just kind of, she sounds like a 9-year-old at her own birthday party, kind of being, you know, given loads of presents, just encouraged to do whatever the hell she likes.
I don't know. I mean, I don't feel that passionate about this particular track, but my feelings for Lady Gaga have gone from, oh my god, go away, who is this woman, put your crutch away, actually she's quite entertaining, oh, I quite like this song, oh my god, she's amazeballs, which is where I'm at now. She, you know, she's just kind of all the things that you really want a pop star to be. And if she wasn't in the charts, I think it would be an incredibly boring place. That said, you know, maybe the way to win over the public is just to release a single every week, because that's what she seems to be doing at the moment. She's, you know, she's really gone for it, as Alex said. It's a little formulaic. I kind of thought, oh, this is the Pet Shop Boysy bit, and this is a bit Madonna-y, and then the chorus that comes is very typically her, like you said, the sort of full throttle, but it's also incredibly goofy, which is something she's not afraid to be, and it's what I've grown to like about her that I didn't see initially, which was the kind of sex appeal that unfortunately female pop stars use to get attention. Once they've got it, her and also Shakira is an example of someone that's not afraid to be quite weird and goofy and a bit stupid with their moves. And I mean, maybe she doesn't think she's being that, but it is much more entertaining than someone that just takes their clothes off or walks around in their knickers, what she was doing before.
But she does still take her clothes off and walk around in her knickers.
Sure.
I mean, she's had 3 massive international hits this year. This is the sort of obvious fourth. She's just kind of in the zone, isn't she? She's in what Neil Tennant always said was the imperial pop stars, the imperial period that pop stars have, which is when you can do no wrong. It lasts about 6 months.
And after that, and that's in your first iteration, your first sound.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's when it's really happening for you. And then after Imperial comes Survival.
Well, come, we'll talk about Robbie Williams later on. Anyway, that is Bad Romance by Lady Gaga, and it's available to buy on October the 27th. Second track on Singles Club is Dear God by Monsters of Folk. God, what keeps you out, it keeps me in. Well, I've been thinking about, and I've been breaking it down with an answer. I know I'm thinking about, but if you're love still around, that was The Monsters of Folk with Dear God. The Monsters consist of Connor Oberst, M. Ward and Jim James of My Morning Jacket. The term folk supergroup has been used to describe the act. No one really knows how a folk supergroup would differ from a rock one, but you can be pretty sure that televisions would never be thrown from hotel windows. That said, they might be switched off at the plug to save on electricity. Rosie Swash.
This is my choice.
Folky time.
Defend it. I was on the Guardian Music Weekly Facebook page.
Oh, were you?
And a listener said, what do you think of the Monsters of Folk album? And I said, I have not listened to it. So I went away and listened to it. And as a whole, I wasn't...
Alex, check this out. This is Web 2.0
yeah,
interaction.
Yeah.
Crowdsourced.
And I wasn't blown away by the whole thing, but this track, I just couldn't stop listening to this track. It's quite not a trio of... Well, actually, there's another guy in the group as well, but it's not a group of people you would expect to make something that begins by sounding almost like an Isaac Hayes track in places. And I think it's Jim Jones who does the first verse. His voice just sounds absolutely beautiful. I love the syncopated drums and you know, the way the harp gives way to this quite almost melodramatic chord change. I don't like the lyrics. I just think they're really... I think if you're going to pen a song called Dear God, you've got to do a bit more than basically say, I'm not really sure if you're out there, and I'm not really sure why I would ask you if you were there, which is kind of what it amounts to. Purely on how this song sounds, I think it's absolutely lovely. It's one of my favourite of the year.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. Oh. I think it's really beautiful. Reminds me of Portishead, actually. Mm. So it reminds me a bit of Jeff Barrow. Alex?
I thought it was quite early 70s, a bit Isley Brothers type of thing. And also, it taps in a bit to the kind of Balearic, some say Balearic, sound that's coming that's coming back a bit by Kindness, and which sounds a bit in turn like Why by Carly Simon. But it's got that sort of woozy feeling, very, very summery, despite the fact it's October.
With supergroups, what tends to happen is they, you know, you take these individual elements from otherwise brilliant or, you know, lauded groups, and they get together and you just go like, where's the magic gone? And the opposite appears to have happened in this track, in that they've, you know, this unique sort of alchemy of the situation has brought out something quite beautiful and unlikely in all of them. Unfortunately, it's just a
maybe it was God that did it.
Maybe. How did you? If you were out there and I could speak to you, I would ask, how did we make this one song so much better than the rest?
I wish the listeners could see the seriousness on your face when you delivered that line, Alex.
That's an agnostic, if ever I saw one. Okay, that is Monsters of Folk with Dear God. It's available on iTunes right now. Final track on Singles Club is Bye Bye Bayou by LCD Sound System. That was LCD Sound System with Bye Bye Bayou. LCD Sound System is the alter ego of James Murphy, a man who insists on making dance music despite the fact he is closer to claiming his pension than he is to getting a student loan. Bye Bye Bayou is a cover of an early 80s number by Alan Vega and was released on limited edition 12-inch 2 weeks ago in order to raise awareness for struggling record shops. The fact that we're only telling you about this now may suggest the publicity stunt didn't quite work. So James Murphy is ace, and I await the new LCD Sound System album with more excitement than I await Christmas. Just about. I've listened to the original in the course of research, and it's very similar to this cover. It's almost like a statement of affinity, I think, as much as a reworking. The only real change is that it's taken a rockabilly groove and switched it for a more disco one. But I think it brings to the fore one of the things that James Murphy, I think, is brilliant at. He makes 8-minute records that feel like 4-minute records, and you can always get lost in the groove of a track. So it may not be the best LCD thing they've ever recorded, but an average LCD song is still more interesting than most, I would say. Alex?
I listened to the Alan Vega original as well. I'd not heard that before. Funny enough, a lot of people are covering Suicide songs at the moment. There's the Klaxons have done one, Primal Scream's done one. But yeah, I thought that was that did update the kind of spirit of it. And it was as good as the original in its own way, although he's maybe not got as much presence as Alan Vega as a vocalist. But I loved all that, you know, like all that stuff. It sounds really amazing. There's some great helicopters that come in.
Dubby helicopters.
Halfway through, all the kind of dubby, echoey effects are great.
What do you make of it, Rosie?
I do quite like it. I feel as though there's the pressure after Sound of Silver, which was loved by so many people, was such a highlight. And also I think, I'd find it hard to believe they can repeat what he did with that album, because there was something so unique about the melancholy that seemed to capture something that was in the air at the time. So I think this is his way of saying, I'm not even going to try. You know, the helicopter bit really made me laugh, and it also made me think, well, maybe he's not taking it all that seriously either, which is brilliant. I think it didn't really... I loved the groove in it, but at the same time, I kind of expected it to do something a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And it didn't, but I agree that 8 minutes wasn't a problem. I was like, oh. Okay, yeah, that didn't seem to drag on.
He did disappoint me once, actually. I once saw him at a festival in Spain, and they took 2 hours to set up because they were so busy fannying around. Sound. He also blogged for us, didn't he, and caused a lot of uproar among the users, because he wouldn't use any capital letters or punctuation.
And wasn't writing about music.
Other than that, though, he went down like a house on fire.
It's not hard to annoy them, though, is it? Let's face it.
Bye Bye Bayou is streaming online now, and if you can find a 12-inch of the track, then good for you. A couple of quick quotes on the blog for about last week's show. EJD chipped in to say he liked both the Portico Quartet and the Phoenix track we reviewed last week, but he went on to say that Phoenix's album surprised me, or rather I'm surprised I like it, because the last one was a little bit doo-doo. Japantha also chipped in saying that Portico Quartet track sounded ace, by the way. Okay, we want your reviews of this week's tracks, LCD Sound System, Monsters of Folk and Lady Gaga. You can post them on the blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly or on our Facebook fan page. Search Music Weekly to find that. Tell us what you think of those tracks and these others out to buy next week. Baby, don't worry. You are my only. You won't be lonely. Even if the sky is falling down. Jay Sean, Down. No need to worry. The Son of God, somebody help me sing. Can anybody hear me? Biffy Clyro, The Captain. Liars and lovers combine tonight. We're gonna make a scene. Bounce slow, bounce slow, bounce high, bounce high. All I do is party. Ha, ha, ha. Yo, see, Mr. Clift, bounce. Get high too. I get high too. Yes, I like what you like. Good lesbian, no call. Let's go back to your house. Maximo Park, 12. In your disheveled room, we're gonna wash ourselves in sin. That is your montage. That was your Singles Club. And this is me saying thank you to Alex Needham for joining us on Singles Club today.
Thanks very much. It was a pleasure.
Great. Great to have you. Back to high culture for you now,
yeah,
I'm afraid. Next on Music Weekly, the Jazz Odyssey, the Jazz-dacy continues as we chat to Portico Quartet. That's Paper, Scissors, Stone by Portico Quartet, Rosie's recommendation from last week's Singles Club. Now, last week's single makes this week's guest, Rosie.
Yes, it's just like that. That's me clicking my fingers quite badly.
And your jazz journey is continuing. Japantha was on the blog offering words of support to you. He's saying, don't let the jazz snobs intimidate you into holding off talking about jazz. And why do people, I do it myself, feel the need to preface their comments with, I don't know anything about jazz, but if you like it, you like it. Simple as that.
Simples,
exactly. So tell us what you think about Portico Quartet and why you
want to... I have an apology to make to you. I corrected you last week and said you pronounced the instrument han with no G, silent G, and I'm wrong. It is, in fact, hang. So you were right and I was wrong and I'm sorry. And that is the only time you're going to get an apology out of me.
I'm going to explode with satisfaction. That so made my week.
So two of the guys from the band who currently reside in East London, Nick and Duncan, both play the hang. They take it in turns and they came in during the week to talk about their new album, Iris. They're quite keen to play up the other elements of their music, which are not simply jazz. So I started off by getting them to explain to me how their sound has progressed since they were nominated for the Mercury last year.
I think quite a lot, you know, as I begin to reflect on it. I mean, making it, it's hard to get that perspective, but I think we tried to push everything, really.
I think this is the way it came out, I guess. Like, we must have... We're always listening to different music and sort of evolving, so... And perhaps some of, you know, some of the more electronics and the kind of the strings and stuff of... added to that too.
And what about the actual recording process for this album? How different was that compared to the first time round?
It was quite different, actually. I mean, essentially it was kind of the same. In the first one, we spent, you know, maybe 5 days, 4 days just doing all the tracks live, and then it was mixed. But then this one, you know, we sort of did the 3 days at Abbey Road, got it all down, but then we spent another week sort of doing overdubs and stuff and just trying loads of different bits and bobs out that we didn't have the opportunity to last time, and then mixing and then mastering. So it's a kind of as lengthier process.
So how long have you been together now?
Four years? Yeah, four just and a bit years, maybe four and a half.
4 years, second album, you're already in Abbey Road Studios working with legendary producer.
It was good.
Do you all come from... I mean, are you all highly trained?
No.
Really?
No, I mean, not really. None of us have been to conservatory or... I mean, Duncan can't even tell the notes on the piano. You know, which one's C or D or anything. All of us have some background. We've all been playing music since maybe we were 12 or something, and then...
You know, Milo, the bass player, has been... He's sort of... Hasn't been to a conservatoire, but he studied, you know, he played cello and violin and And then both Jack and Miley played the Southampton Youth Jazz Orchestra, so they've got... It's not a formal education, but definitely had a ground.
Yeah, it's some background, definitely.
And in terms of the minimalist stuff, is there anyone in particular, you know, producers or composers that influences you guys?
Definitely, you know, Steve Reich would probably be number one on the hit list.
And I think all our first tunes were pretty much just kind of like Steve Reich sort of rip-offs. and then even some of the first album, like not rip-offs, but influences were very bare, laid bare. And I'm happy with the second one that it's all kind of starting to really get kind of juicy.
And is there anything, you know, other than just having the experience of playing together and having already made an album, by the time you get to this one, is there... Anything else that changes that? Any other influences that take you away from the Steve Reich ripoff?
Yeah.
Aside from actual music, but I think the process of writing it was probably almost the biggest influence, I think, in terms of being able to, what Nick just said about kind of assimilating the ideas and sort of merging them a bit better, I suppose, or sort of gel better.
Whereas in the first album, I think some of the references sort of poked out a bit. It was sort of a bit conscious. Whereas this one feels like it's kind of, because we had longer to write it, we kind of worked through our ideas pretty heavily. And I think that sort of process sort of, yeah, merged them a bit fuller.
So it helps that you all live together?
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah. There's nowhere to hide when you have a creative falling out.
Well, we're pretty good at leaving things down the bottom of the garden.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When maybe we come that's out in the house, it's
I like that metaphor. Yeah. It's like when the husband goes to the shed for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
To cool off. And also in sort of descriptions of this of the Portico Quartet sound, but also how you've talked about it yourself, is the hang itself as being so sort of crucial to the sound.
I think it sort of chimed with us because it sort of, yeah, it combines sort of rhythm and tone basically, but really, really accessibly. So if you wanted to learn to play, it's not difficult.
Very intuitive.
Hmm.
Is it just as you go out, the notes change?
It's kind of, I think it's set up so it's to be played with the hand, so it feels really intuitive, like the kind of the arrangement of the notes. It's not, is that right?
Yeah, it's kind of a scale from low to high.
Where does it come from as an instrument, do you know?
It's Swiss.
Right, okay, yeah. I wasn't expecting that.
No, I mean, obviously it borrows lots of ideas from the steel pans and from Indonesian gamelan and Indian instruments as well.
Yeah,
it's kind of, it's a real
Tibetan singing bowls. they just, these makers, instrument makers in Switzerland just really drew from all the world's different metal musical traditions and made this amazing thing.
The hang is kind of actually similar in its sort of the way it's made and came about, I guess, our music in a way, you know.
Itself
being a mashup of lots of different ideas, and then our music sort of equating.
And as much as, almost equally as much as I like the sound it gives us, I like the getting us free of references, you know, that it brings.
Going back to the Mercuries, obviously it was a year ago, so I'm sure that you've gotten over not winning it. And do you sort of care this time around with this album about, you know, repeating any of that success? Does that, or how it's received, is that at all on your mind?
Yeah, I think we all ended up pretty happy with how it came out. It is hard once you've been living sort of really close to it for months to sort of have any perspective on if it's what you've done, I suppose. We've had some good reviews so far.
Which is nice.
Yeah, it's really satisfying. I think, you know, I would like to say I don't care at all.
But that would be a lie.
It would be. I was confident, but definitely, as Douglas said, sort of, you know, I couldn't quite tell how it's going to be received, and then I think we all gave it our best.
Did you have when you got together as a group, did you have a plan for what you wanted to do? Or did it all just...
No, but there would often be funny points where we'd be like, I want to play the Barbican, I want to do this. And then quite a lot of them have, you know, I remember saying along when we were making the first album, being like, this is going to get nominated for Mercury.
Yeah.
Just start joking. But then, so when it happens,
really?
You're like, yeah.
Definitely.
Like, start asking for more. Myself.
Maybe you should have been more arrogant about it, because that seemed to work for Speech to Bell. She was going around for the weeks beforehand saying, I'm going to win. And then she actually did. So.
Yeah, maybe.
Perhaps we should have.
Maybe.
Yep, next time round.
Well, this next one's going to win Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
You and Obama. So is that's the next thing? You don't have any other slightly more manageable?
That's manageable.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not? Of course.
I left her. I'd have a Nobel Peace Prize.
Why not?
All right, let's leave it there. That was Duncan and Nick from Portico Quartet, and their latest album, Isla, is out now.
Thanks, Rosie. And I really do look forward to the day when jazzers bring peace. David Goff. He may not be a name well known to you, but he's a vital cog in the machine that is Guardian / Music. He's the hard-pressed, deep-thinking sub-editor. He is a man of many actions, but few words, which may be because he's been saving them for this week's feature with no name. Yes, here's our colleague David on Afghan Whigs.
The Afghan Whigs were, without doubt, one of the greatest live bands of the 90s. And in Greg Dooley, they boasted one of the finest frontmen in alt-rock. Of all the groups that failed to achieve mainstream success in that decade, they were perhaps the most deserving of wider recognition, as well as the most distinctive and memorable. Formed in Cincinnati, Ohio in 1986, the Afghan Whigs started out as a raucous garage rock band that became associated with grunge after signing to Sub Pop in 1989. Dooley's songwriting, however, grew more ambitious, and his band quickly evolved into a more sophisticated group, incorporating elements from 70s soul, R&B and funk into their music. The Afghan Whigs brought a swagger and groove to grunge, their soul-inflected sound providing a seductive come-on before leading the listener down a darker direction. Dooley chronicled the dark side of relationships, detailing the pain partners inflict on each other when they break down. Black Love, released in 1996, brings a cinematic scope and symphonic sweep to his lyrical landscape. On this album, Dooley's songs are set in a noirish cityscape in which he assumes the role of an underworld figure who damns himself after making a deal with the devil. Racked with guilt and regret, he spends each night atoning for his crimes, clinging to the hope of redemption. With Dooley's voice alternating between a plaintive cry and a seductive whisper, you can hear his soul howling beneath the din. Afghan Whigs' cult appeal came from their reputation as a live band. Their concerts were legendary. Lasting more than 3.5 hours, they resembled a mini Mardi Gras, where brooding introspection was transformed into a carnival-like celebration. Dooley, ever the consummate showman, contrived a charismatic persona that was both Lothario and loner, delivering stand-up routines between songs and chain-smoking through the set. He brought to mind the barfly banter of Tom Waits and the bilious flair of Bill Hicks. Fans were treated to inspired covers of songs by Prince, the Jackson 5 and the Supremes, which was unusual for a genre that was not known for being influenced by black musicians. The Afghan Whigs disbanded in 2001, citing geographical differences. Dooley now enjoys success with the Twilight Singers and with the Gutter Twins, a collaboration with fellow grunge survivor Mark Lanegan. But though these bands often hint at greatness, neither matches the sensual swagger and majestic melancholy of the Afghan Whigs. Kick yourself if you didn't get the chance to see them live, and then do yourself a favour and seek their albums out.
That was David Goff on the Afghan Whigs, and the feature with no name is back next week. Now, just a little bit of time left, and we will use it in the customary fashion to read back some of your face back. Rosie, on Facebook, we had a message from Chris Jones.
Been enjoying your podcasts for a few months now. Last time I was hooked on a music show was John Peel in the late 70s and early 80s. That dates me. My God.
That is the ultimate compliment. Well, I'm surprised. I'm really surprised that wasn't followed up by a request for work experience. Because that's usually the only way you would make a compliment like that. Now, we're now into pronunciation corner.
Sure.
As we've already discussed, there are issues around this.
I think you pronounce this eat a gay fetus.
Well, this is why I didn't want to pronounce it the way it read, because exactly, it looks like something you get shot for in Alabama. Anyway, on the issue of Sufjan Stevens, he says, so I used to pronounce it Sufjan, hard J, and then I read somewhere it was Sufjan. Now do I have to go back to calling him Sufjan or what? We haven't actually gone into any research here on this, but I'm going to go with you on what you said. You were very confident on last week. You were the one who got to speak to the guy. So
Sufjan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've always heard people call him that.
Yeah. So it depends on whether you put an extra stress on the U or not.
And he's a slightly pretentious, if not very intelligent and interesting guy. so he probably would put that extra stress in there.
Okay, so we'll, so it's, so yeah, we're gonna go for on Eat a Dead Fetus Eat a Gay Fetus. On his rank of Sufyan pronunciations, it's the Soofyan. And that is it for eternity. Okay, great. I'm afraid that is it for this week's show. Rosie, I hope you will be back next week to join us.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to that then. We'll see you on Friday. Bye.